You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent Magazine for real estate industry sales professionals, property managers and leaders. Each episode, we bring you behind-the-scenes coaching, news analysis, exclusive interviews, technology and more to help you list more, sell more and elevate your results. To subscribe to the magazine, visit eliteagent.com.au/subscribe. Here is your host, Samantha McLean.
Hey, 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 everyone. Samantha McLean from Elite Agent Magazine, proud to bring you our weekly news recap for the week of the 3rd of November. Being the beginning of the month, we're going to talk about how the market did last month, what's going on around the industry, and some more on some productivity tools for you all, behind the scenes on our story with the young talent at the agency, and much, much more. To kick it off with me is our birthday boy, Mark Edwards. Happy birthday, Mark. How are you going?
Yeah, I'm good. I was wondering whether you were going to fit that in there at all. Yeah,
I just won't tell everyone how old you are.
Thanks, Sam. That's good. look, it's been a massive week, and as you said, the beginning of the month is very much about the numbers, and there are heaps of them flying around.
Yeah. So obviously, CoreLogic has their October numbers out, and not really very surprising results there, I don't think.
No, they were basically saying that there was no change in October for the results that came out. There was a slight increase for the quarter, 0.4%. So it's pretty much nothing really, but it's not backwards.
Oh, well, I mean, for the month in Sydney, it was slightly backwards, but you know, when you look at all the combined capitals, basically was a goose egg. So yeah, so all up, Sydney, Perth and Darwin were the only capital cities to record a fall in values for the quarter. Units, again, the reason that pulled the Sydney market down, because houses actually did okay again. Hobart, once again, the strongest performing capital city, up 3.3% for the rolling quarter. I swear if I didn't live in Sydney, I'd want to move to Hobart, buy a big TV and put my feet up. Anyway.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's it, Sammy. We could run this magazine from anywhere, couldn't we? So Hobart, here we come.
Yeah, either that or a tropical island. You take your pick. But the HIA had their figures out as well. A fall in new home sales from their peak in March 2016. New house sales falling by 4.5% with a reduction of 16.7% on the multi-unit side of the market. Yep. But new buildings in New South Wales, like, so that was a negative result across the country. However, in New South Wales, the numbers are still up. So
yeah, the approvals, yeah.
But then it's really confusing because that was for the month before, because remember CoreLogic report in November for October, and you've got to remember that the HIA and the ABS are like a month behind them. So that's why we say hashtag in Tim we trust.
right on the money.
Exactly.
Speaking of all matters CoreLogic, they've actually given us a snapshot of what's happening on the weekend. Look, last weekend, close to 3,800 auctions over the weekend. It was sort of a record. This weekend, a lot less. We're coming down to around about half, actually. 1,862 going to be held across the combined capital cities. The big notable difference is Melbourne, down from almost 2,000 down to 258. Looks like everyone's pulling up stumps and going to GGs.
Yeah, well, I said that last week, that, you know, like Melbourne would bring the auction numbers down with all the horsing action going on. So are you ready to pick a winner yet?
Yeah, I think actually we were talking this morning and saying we're wondering whether the statisticians over at CoreLogic would have their own magical formulas and calculators out to work out who's going to be the winner. So maybe we might need to be knocking on Tim's door.
Seeing if in Tim we trust for the Melbourne Cup too. But
exactly.
Yeah, but in all fairness to those guys, I mean, you know, I used to work for PwC around some very, very smart people. The actuaries used to crunch the numbers on the form guide. every year, and without fail, they were wrong. They don't take the emotion of it into account. So, you know, it's really, really hard to with numbers. So
they say it's a mugs game, don't they? But I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Just rounding out the numbers, even though there was a record weekend, it still had a steady clearance rate of 64.5%. Melbourne was the outstanding performer with above 70% clearance, Sydney below 60%. And Geelong had an almost staggering 80% clearance rate. So a lot of activity was happening down in Victoria.
Interesting, I suppose, this week too, is sometimes, you know, like with the news, like, or with the regular news, you know, someone says that on Channel 9 or Channel 10 that the clearance rates have dropped, and then all of a sudden, you know, your vendors don't want to take properties to auction because they sort of feel like it mightn't be a good method. But there was a story actually from LJ Hooker's head of auctions who sort of said there's a bunch of reasons why you shouldn't listen to that. And for our listeners, both sides of the story, we'll leave a link in the show notes, but there's some good points there as to what you should tell your vendors about going to auction even when people are saying clearance rates have dropped, because there's, you know, various reasons as to why they would have. Well, Melbourne Cup this week is a prime example, just other stuff going on. It doesn't necessarily mean that auctions are a bad way of selling. So thanks for sending that in, David.
Yeah, look, I also saw something on the social feeds as well. Stu Benson made a comment around some of the results from the block auctions that happened and what impact that has for vendors when they see such huge numbers above set reserves and what that can actually do to their, you know, the motivation to sell on the actual day. You know, I think there's a number of sides to that story, particularly as to what your motivations are.
We did a story on that last year because the whole idea of the block auctions are, they're a bubble, really. They're a bubble in time and, again, as unpredictable as the Melbourne Cup, really. it's not like you can apply any of the logical rules of underquoting or anything like that to what goes on the block, because, you know, it's a TV show and it's a PR machine. And we did interview some of the block auctioneers last year, so Stu included, Glenn Coutinho, the guys from Jealous Craig, and it was quite revealing how different that whole block setup is. So if you're interested, have a look at that.
Yes, indeed.
Okay, so also in numbersrent.com.au have done a bit of number crunching and given us a list of what they see as Australia's, well, the highs and the lows, really, the cheapest and most expensive suburbs. Very big list.
They actually went through quite a fair bit of detail right across the country, you know, so from whether it be the most affordable in the state to the most expensive, and what was the suburbs with the median rents as well.
Yeah, so no surprises, Sydney was on top.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a big gap there as well in between the different rental properties you can get, whether from the lower end to the higher end. It was, you know, sort of interesting to actually have a look and see what suburbs there were. There weren't too many surprises, but it was actually interesting to see the difference between, you know, so what you can get, for example, in Sydney and what you can get in Tassie.
There you go. There's another reason to move to Hobart, hey? But the other thing with this is this is another one of those cases where if you look at this story and you sort of see your suburb with a rent number near it and you disagree with it, then it is likely that the data is not that good in that area. So this is another one of those cases, really. So CoreLogic mapped their own data to their results. Rent.com.au mapped their own data to their results. Domain mapped their own data. Realestate.com.au mapped their data. In some places, the data is going to be really good where that company happens to be really strong. In other places, the data is not going to be so great. What we're saying is don't shoot the messenger on this one because, you know.
We're the messenger, folks.
Yeah, we're the messenger. So just bear in mind that list is according to rent.com.au's data.
And thanks to the guys for actually sending it across because it was quite an interesting read.
Yeah, very much so. The whole completion of the spin-off of Domain from Fairfax Media was decided. So, you know, that's been ongoing for a while, rumoured for a long time and ongoing for a while. So they voted that Fairfax will retain 60% of Domain and the existing Fairfax shareholders will make up the remaining 40%. So basically that means no sort of venture capitalists or anything like that coming in. It's
keeping it in the family.
All the same people. Still a bit unclear as to how the agent equity model fits into that, but I'm sure that will fall out given time.
Yeah.
So that's what's happening with Fairfax. Console have sold Property IQ, which includes the ADL, I think it's Strata software, to Macquarie Bank. Yep. So, you know, Macquarie Bank are a part owner in the consortium that owns Console. So basically it's just been a bit of a reshuffling of the decks there. Mm.
Yeah, no, I think it was a pretty logical side of things for, I think it was going to eventually happen, but yeah, so it's good that it's been underlined there now.
Yeah, yeah. The institutes around the country have been a little bit noisy this week. So
yeah, they have.
Election time in Queensland, November 25. So the REIQ have put together a list of things that they would like to see from the new government. And it's something that we see quite commonly now is that the REIs are doing, you know, a lot of very noisy lobbying of governments. Mm. We saw it with REWA a few months ago before their general election. It looks like some of the stuff that they were saying paid off. So,
yeah,
I mean, you know, like what does Tommy Panos say? If you don't ask, the answer will always be no.
That's right. So they've put themselves a wish list together, and look, a lot of the things they're asking for are the things that, you know, we've heard a lot about. But you know, I think there's some good food for thought there for the existing and potentially the incoming government if there is going to be a change of guard there.
Mm. And speaking of guards changing, the REIQ have some new board members as well. So John Newlands and Damien Keyes. Congrats to those guys for being elected to the board. And then over in South Australia, so RESA President Alex Owens, he, you know, was reflecting on basically the slow quarter in South Australia and the monster that stamp duty is. And, you know, like, I've sort of been looking into stamp duty a bit myself around the country just in preparation for our event because, you know, I sort of think that there's some technological things that are going to make that stamp duty thing quite hard to justify in the future, which I'll be talking about at the event. But, you know, I think everyone is very frustrated right now with the levels of stamp duty around the country.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, it's been a common debate that's been had for many a year. And the flip side of that, though, is it's a great cash cow for the government. So if you take from that, you know, there's going to need to be compensations from another area. So I don't know whether it's going to change quickly.
Mm.
But I think it's something that, particularly with the increasing cost of property, that something will eventually have to change. But when that will happen, don't know.
When you think about stamp duty, I mean, originally it was for a stamp on the contracts.
Mm.
So, you know, like that, and that was the fee to get someone out of bed to actually physically put a stamp on a piece of paper.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it is a bit of an outdated tax. And, you know, I don't know if you're aware or not, but the Land Titles Registry in New South Wales, it was sold for $2.6 billion to a hedge fund. You know, So, you know, there's a lot of talk about blockchain and land registries coming together. And so, you know, I guess that's probably one of the things that we'll watch with interest over the next. But $2.6 billion to outsource the land registry in New South Wales, that's a lot of money.
It's a huge number, isn't it? But then when you think about it, if you've got an organisation such as a hedge fund, they go into things with the ambition to actually make a dollar, but also to streamline and make something more efficient. So this could be the precursor to actually grabbing something that is steeped in history and tradition and archaeity, and then bringing it forward so that it will actually fit into a blockchain environment. You know, the first real step in being able to digitize that environment to create something that's going to be easily referenceable right across a digital transaction.
Mm, a digital step.
Yeah, a digital stamp.
So that's the REIs around the country. Over in franchise land, Stone Real Estate has opened up in Tuchley. That's Wyong's stomping ground under the helm of Ron Coleman. So that's a new office.
Another
for Stone.
Office under the belt there, yep.
Yeah. Di Jones have created a new role for a head of customer service.
That's on the back of their social media manager role a few months ago as well. So they're making some additions there to the senior leadership team there. Coronis also appointed a chief operating officer in their organisation as well.
Yeah, so it's interesting that we're seeing these specialist leaders coming into these groups to actually manage specific functions. Like what we're seeing, I guess, is these larger real estate groups starting to behave more corporately in terms of having these specialist people to look after marketing, customer service, social media, that sort of thing. So, you know, that sort of looks starting to look a bit like a trend, really.
Isn't it?
Mm. And then, of course, the McGrath report was out this week. So everyone sort of hotly anticipates the McGrath report, where John gets his crystal ball out and has a look at, you know, what's happening for the property market for the next year.
We got ours in the office earlier on this week, and it was actually quite a nice little publication, that one, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was actually, and very interesting. And I mean, you know, he quite rightly points out that, you know, it's all about affordability, and very interesting read if you can get your hands on one of those. We'll be asking John a few questions about that for the next issue of the magazine, which will be in December.
Good summary though that Azel's put together on it, which again will be in the show notes below.
Yeah, absolutely. So this week we kind of had Tom Ferry in the house, didn't we? So
kind of sorta.
So number one coach in the US, Tom Ferry. Many of you guys will have seen him at ARIC. Claudio was actually over in LA a couple of weeks ago and did some interviews with him. So we've got three videos coming up. But the first one was on leadership. And as you all know, we're having a leadership event, not next week, the week after. It's exciting. Hey, like, you know, like it's our first big event. So, you know, the excitement's kind of building.
Exactly.
But we've got a competition going on Facebook that Tom Ferry, in terms of what he was saying about leadership, gave three very good leadership tips. He's a bit like Tony Robbins these days. Like, he actually has Tom Ferry certified coaches underneath him, and then underneath them they have teams. So, you know, like his processes and methodology and coaching and all that sort of thing, you know, because he's responsible for coaching so many people. So he had some advice that he learned about leadership along the way as his team has grown. And then, you know, we sort of thought we'd play a bit of a dirty trick on our readers and told them all that unfortunately Tim the editor had spilt his decaf non-dairy latte all over the keyboard and that we weren't going to tell anyone what the third one was until the event. So we will be revealing the third one at the event. But if you want to try and score yourself a free ticket for our leadership event, you'll have to go onto Facebook and have a guess at what Tom might have been about to say. And if you think you know, leave us a comment. And if you are right, we'll give you a free ticket. So far, no one has even been remotely close.
He had some really interesting things to say, though, didn't he?
He did. And that was the whole point, really, because he kind of said, well, here's the first tip, here's the second tip. But you all know that anyway, because a lot of the stuff in the industry, you know, like we hear over and over again. And so he quite rightly said, but you all know that anyway. And then he said, wait a minute, I'm going to give you something you maybe don't know. And then that was when we sort of got mean and cut it out. But we will be revealing the answer on the 14th of November. And if you think you know what the answer might have been, please hop onto our Facebook page. If you get it right, we'll be only too happy to give you a free ticket.
All will eventually be revealed.
Absolutely. And so also on the event, so Matt Hall, Red Bull Racing Champion, has returned from Europe where he
had... And the US. The last one that he did was in...
Indianapolis. Yep.
Indianapolis, yeah.
So he's come home and he'll be speaking at our event. And according to Matt, and I think this is true, so he was right up the top of the rankings for the first few years of that Red Bull race and then had plane problems, had to get a new plane and a new team, and then work out, okay, well, how are we actually going to get back to, like, you know, because you can't get in one of those planes and go...
Right, let's go.
Yeah, it's not like getting in a car and putting your foot down and going as fast as you can, because you've got to get through those chicanes, and if you've never seen these guys race, you've really got to have a look at it. And so Matt had a plan to get used to the plane and get the plane flying faster and faster and get the team used to what was going on around him. And he's going to talk a bit about that at the event, because sometimes, you know, like in real estate, in any business really, the temptation is always to put your foot flat to the floor and grow as quickly as you can. But sometimes, you know, as Macca says, more speed, less haste.
He was also talking about the temptation of wanting to do it all yourself as well.
Mm.
So by doing everything yourself is that although you may have a team sitting around you, you may be, you know, sort of inevitably just taking on too much yourself and you becoming the single point of failure. So I think that was a really powerful thing that he was talking to us about in his prep for the event, because they're a really close-knit group of competitors, the Red Bull Air Racing team. And I saw a clip where in Germany, I think it was in Germany, in the Alps, they had a series of 14 of those giant wind turbines. And they had one of the planes just weaving in and out of these turbines. Absolutely incredible flying, but also the trust and faith that they've got in their machinery and their team in order to do that is amazing.
Mm, it's very, very skilled what he does. So we will actually be answering the question, how to lead a winning team at the event. If you haven't got your tickets yet, there's a few left. Go to eliteagent.com.au/win2018. We do have a special offer for our Elevate listeners, right, Mark?
Yep, absolutely. If you want to get a special discount, we've only got about 40 tickets left or something like that. If you use the discount code ELEVATE at checkout, you'll get $150 off the ticket price. So it brings it down to $345 for 20-plus speakers are going to be on the day in Sydney, 8 a.m., 5 p.m., hot lunch.
We're not going to send you away for lunch. It's important. That's important.
Got to keep well fed.
Yeah, absolutely. Keep your energy up while you're learning lots. Okay, so some of the features this week. So first of all, Evan Broadbent from Harcourt's Warrigal/Quick Real Estate. He had an interesting article in the magazine about making quick sales. You know, like some people say that quick sales are not always in the interest of the vendor, because if you have a longer marketing campaign, then the more likely it is that you'll get the right buyer or the emotional buyer or the person that's going to pay that premium price. But he also said that sometimes the longer the campaign runs, so, you know, it's a balancing act here that, you know, the less likely something is to sell. So he's posted an article which is about how to get a quick sale, which might be really good if someone wants to, you know, quickie sale before Christmas. So that's pretty cool from Evan.
The weeks are ticking on, aren't they?
They are ticking on. It's getting close. Also this week in All Things Fast, we talked to Rockend about their new product, Invoice Genius. So if you have 1,000 or so properties on your rent roll, I think they've done some study that it's likely that you're entering around about 20,000 invoices every year. So that's the equivalent to 4 working weeks of your life that you are never going to get back. And now Property Tree have a solution to that. It's called Invoice Genius. It is some automated uploading of invoices into your property management software. So definitely check that one out. The last thing that we've got there in technology too, and it's on the subject of efficiency really, is from Ian Campbell. So you did this interview with Ian, didn't you, Mark?
Yeah, I did. And it was quite an interesting one. He was talking a lot about, you know, sort of, well, we've spoken about it a number of times about the subscription economy, as how everything is so easy to be able to subscribe to a service. For example, we're doing this podcast on a platform which we just basically subscribe to, and it does all the magical stuff to the actual audio waves themselves. But it is so easy these days to be able to go, I'll give that a try, or I'll try this piece of software, and looking for that magical blend that everything's going to work together and is going to solve our problems. What eventually happens, though, is that you're getting all of these different applications that you try maybe for a month or two, and then something better and more shinier comes along, and then that sort of it just basically doesn't get used, but you still, you know, the ticket's just being clipped on the way through, and all of a sudden you're paying for a whole lot of stuff that you don't actually use. So Ian spoke about how to do a technology audit, and then to work out what is the technology you're actually using and what's the value of actually keeping certain pieces and then ditching the rest. You made the analogy of, you know, so when you do the spring clean of your wardrobe, when was the last time you used it, or when was the last time you wore it, and are you likely to ever wear it again? If not, the answer is pretty simple. He also then spoke about, well, when you actually do then make that decision as to what you're going to keep, how then do you actually get the greatest usage out of that piece of software? So it was a really good conversation he had there. And we've got a short video, but also the podcast, which is coming out in the next few days.
Yeah, so have you been through our bank statements yet?
It's no.
Safe for another week. But moving right along, Josh Fegan also talked about technology this week. I mean, obviously this has been our annual technology issue, so there's been a bit more about technology than normally would be. But he was sort of saying, like, a lot of people are looking for that silver bullet or that piece of tech that does it all. So, you know, like while Ian's saying keep an eye on your subscriptions because you can end up with a heap of them, Josh is actually saying, well, you know, it's okay to choose one from here and one from there. And he calls it app stacking. I think that is the technical term for it. And then you can use something like Zapier or If This Then That to transfer data between applications. That's the way that the world is going now, is use best of breed applications for different horses for courses, if you like, another Melbourne Cup kind of analogy. But
then have the API in the middle that's going to let them talk to each other. And used to be the scenario where these massive applications used to be built to, in essence, do absolutely everything for everyone. And they became so large and difficult to handle that, you know, so there was a lot of functionality in there that wasn't necessarily used. As what Josh and also Ian was saying, is that you pick the applications that do the job very, very well for that particular task, and then use a middleware or the API stack to be able to stack the apps together.
Yeah. It's just, I suppose, if you're not experienced in that sort of stuff, it's always worth consulting somebody that is knowledgeable in that area, because otherwise, you know, I know we've had a few experiments with app stacks and things like that, and you can sort of get yourself into, you can get your knickers in a bit of a knot with too many things.
Yeah, or you change something in one app that will affect the downstream apps as to what information is expected to be seeing. There are things to take into consideration, but it certainly doesn't mean you shouldn't be, what's the term? Be curious.
I think it's always, ABC, always be curious. Not always be closing, but always be curious.
Exactly.
Natalie Hastings, too, one of our faves down in Melbourne, she does some outsourcing trust accounting, and she's been a regular of ours for ages in the magazine. So she wrote a really interesting article called Are the Riches in the Niches? Yeah, so she was talking about, not being a generalist and being a specialist. And I found that really interesting because that's what Julie Masters was saying in the podcast this week as well. If you want to become a micro authority on something, then you've got to sort of look at the intersection of two places, not just one. And if you're in property management and you're sort of thinking, well, you know, I'm not really appealing to the masses here, like that's a really interesting article to look at to sort of say, am I marketing myself the right way? Do I need to actually become a micro authority, not just in property management, but in something else, whether it's, you know, a certain type of investor? Yeah, so that was a really interesting article from Natalie there, well worth checking out. Last but not least, the future of real estate. And this was interesting. Let's just go behind the scenes a little bit on this story for the listeners, shall we? Because last year on the technology issue, we had Tom Panos on the cover because really we needed someone who used technology very, very well.
Yes.
To put up there on the cover. But then once you've had Tom Panos on the cover, it's really kind of hard to go, all right, well, how do we top that? Because every time we do a cover, we put a lot of thought into what the theme is and what we're looking at and what's going on in the industry. And then one day I was at the agency, I was actually interviewing Matt LaHood for Transform. And I saw these, you know, young agents that were hovering around the, because there's a big communal meeting area over there at Bondi, a really beautiful big table where they have all their sales meetings and things like that. And they were just milling about, swapping ideas and things like that. And, you know, I said to Jackie, their PR, who are those guys over there? And she said, oh, that's part of Ben Collier's team. And Angie's just come on board and, you know, like all these different stories about how they were all respectively kicking butt in their areas. And that got me to thinking, well, that would be an interesting cover story for the technology issue. I mean, you got one of them that's sort of generating leads on Gumtree and one of them that's good at Snapchat. And Angie, like, you know, everyone sort of says, points to Gavin Rubenstein and his followers on Instagram. He's got, you know, 14 or 15,000 followers, which is a lot, right? But Angie's got 7,500 followers on her own. And so I thought it'd be really interesting to go around and talk to all these guys about their new ways of prospecting, expecting that it was all going to be about technology. But boy, was I wrong. Like, you know, they're all about building the relationships and it was almost like back to the future, but forward to the future. And really good read there from eight of the guys from the agency, because we kind of went around the country and we got Spencer from Melbourne and a few of the others to talk to us about what they were doing. So really good read there, most popular article of the week, and it's easy to see why, jam-packed with tips.
Oh, absolutely. And the way in which they've combined the new tech and the old tech, so or the old ways of doing things.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Is there such a thing as old tech?
Well, yeah, there is, if you've been around for as long as we have.
Yep.
No more birthday jokes, but we will get out of here, so.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks again, Sam. Another great week spending with you on the tools.
Yeah, fantastic. And it's likely to be a short week next week, but we'll look forward to catching up with everyone again next Saturday.
Enjoy the week, guys.
Thank you. See you soon.
To subscribe to the magazine, visit eliteagent.com.au/subscribe.